Bombs, powder keg of dynamite. We got this hockey on roll tonight. I said, don't be slow. The boy in the back, you know. I said, don't be slow. Ready to rock and roll.
Welcome to Leafs Lounge, a hockey podcast. I'm your host, Adam, and with me is my co-host, Travis. Travis, how's it going tonight?
Pretty good, Adam, even though the Leafs just lost to Washington. But besides that, pretty good.
We picked a good night to record our debut podcast.
We were supposed to record last night, but it was not me. So
okay.
I guess that jinxed us, and I can't put it off, or it'll be lost for sure.
It's all right. Before we get into the overview of the season so far, Travis, why don't you tell the audience about your Leaf fandom, when you became a Leaf fan, and why?
I played hockey all my life, pretty much organized hockey from 4 to 14, and I consistently played at NAHA, but I rooted for the Red Wings growing up for a while, and then I just stopped like watching hockey, and I got into watching the Leafs with my mother and grandmother, so that got me into the Maple Leafs. I was 15, I think. So ever since then, it's been hardcore Leafs. I love them. Unfortunately, it hasn't been much in terms of playoff success or anything like that. But I mean, they're still a hell of a ride.
No, definitely. For me, I'll give my story. I started watching with my grandfather. He was a big fan. My mother's father, and I remember he used to sit me in front of the TV Saturday night because he used to babysit. And two things we used to watch are either wrestling or hockey, whatever happened to be on when he was babysitting. And he loved the Leafs, and you know, so that was the team I followed. Plus, one of my uncles. My dad's uncle was a big Leafs fan, and every time I'd go over his house, the game would be on. So you're as a child, you're inundated with Leafs. So you grew up with that, and you adopt them as your team. But then I think for me, everything kicked into another gear. In the 92-93 season, in the run to the conference final against LA, when Gilmore and Clark and Anderchuk and Glenn Anderson. Felix Pavlin was in all those guys, and you know, the double overtime goal by Gilmore. We've seen the highlights 1,000 times. The wraparound. I remember staying up late, well past my bedtime back in those days, because I was probably about 9, 10, somewhere along those lines. And so disappointment started very early in my Leaf. My Leaf fandom. I'm still bitter about the high stick that Gretzky didn't get called on.
Fun fact there, Adam. my dad is a hardcore like Leaf fan all his life. He remembers the 67 Cup in black and white. It was not in color.
Oh, so he saw it.
Yeah, he saw it. He was 8. And he still, anytime he sees Wayne Gretzky on TV, he gets mad and leaves the room.
Well, tell him when you talk to him again. Tell him I know the feeling. On my end, it's very similar to mine. My dad actually came to Canada from Italy during the Stanley Cup final in 67, and he saw the final game. So I joke with him that he has jinxed the Leafs and that he should go back home to Italy, and then when they win again, we'll bring him back. But
they'll bring him back for the Cup final and then they'll win.
Yeah, so far that idea hasn't flown over too well.
Yeah, so, I didn't think it would.
I'm still trying, but we'll see how it goes. So, in terms of this season, Travis, let's get back to the present. We've got it's been 8 games to start, and they've got a record of 4 wins, 3 losses, and 1 overtime. A shootout loss. Sorry, the shootout loss. It's not the best of records, but it's also not the worst of records. I don't think there's a need to, at least in terms of the record, panic Are you in a panic mode yet, Travis? Because I know there are some Leaf fans that are in full panic mode.
Oh no, I'm not in a panic mode. I might be a little frustrated with how they start games and some of the
Yeah.
stretches of play, but it's no secret that they had a very tough schedule to start the year. I would argue probably the toughest in the Eastern Conference. They
Yeah.
had two back-to-backs in the first, what, 8 games. They lost, the one thing that really bothers me a little bit is that they lost both games on back-to-backs
Yeah.
and
One of
gave
them they
up
could have easily
gave
won too.
both of them. They could have won.
Well, yeah, but one was
The one, I'll excuse them a bit for the Habs one as well, because it was their third game in
Yeah.
four nights. I think it was
I
third
think
game,
so. Yeah,
four
that's
nights.
right. Yeah.
So they've been playing flat out. So I just think it's tough. I don't think that CC is a top four defenseman. They need
Yeah,
there's
we'll get into that for sure.
some injuries, but I'm not worried. It's just not as good of a start as we had last year. So it's just, you know.
I mean, look, for me, if you look at the games that we won, so we won against Ottawa, which really, we basically gave them one of the goals in the 5-3 win. Then Columbus, I believe it was a 4-1 victory against Columbus. And then we beat
Beat Montreal
no, we
when
didn't
it's
beat them. We passed
preseason.
them.
Sorry, preseason. Sorry.
We beat
We beat Ottawa. We beat Columbus.
Columbus, which
We
I
beat
mentioned.
Detroit
Yes,
and
Detroit.
Minnesota.
Detroit was a 5-2 effort,
Yeah.
and then against Minnesota, it was 4-2. And what I think they've shown in all four games is that when they have a concerted effort, and they really focus on attention to detail, they can play a decent defensive game. And I think that was evident in all the games that they won. I really was impressed with the Detroit game because that was essentially the third and fourth liners doing the job and getting the scoring. And then, Minnesota is not the strongest team in the league this year. And so, a victory where they dominated was expected and they delivered on that. So they've had a lot of good stretches of play. When they win, they really show you what kind of team they can be. But again, they seem to need, they one of my frustrations is twofold. One is that, and I think you noted this in a text message, that they seem to have lapses for what seem to be either minutes or entire periods,
Yeah.
depending on the game. And so that's a concern because that's led to two things. That's led to getting scored on first 5 of the 7 or 5 of the 8 games, I think it is, right? Something like that. Or 6 of the 8 games. I could be wrong about that. One of those two. And then, or you get games like against Washington tonight, as of this recording, where, they had a great first period. I thought they tried to get things back under control in the third and mount a comeback. But for 1 minute and 15 seconds in the second period, they just fell asleep and they allowed 3 goals. Now, one was on a 5-on-3 power play, which I don't care who you are. If Washington has a 5-on-3 power play, chances are you're going to get scored on. But, we're professional athletes here. Yes, they're playing on back-to-backs, but every team has to do that. So that's not an excuse for the mental lapse. I don't know what to attribute that to. Like, what do you think? Why do you think this happens to them? Is there something you're seeing that is the culprit of this, the cause of this? What do you think it is?
I'm not even too sure, Adam, to be honest with you. I think that it could be where they had a lot of turnover last year. There's a lot of different people, so they're still learning the system. But honestly, it kind of seems at times that Cedar Tavera's line is usually the one that's been hemmed in at the start of this year. Mm-hmm. And it really makes me wonder how much Zach Hyman actually meant to that line. I can't believe I'm actually saying that. I never thought I would be saying that. I thought he was just an average plug, run-of-the-mill plug. But it, maybe he has some magic with that line, and I think he'll be back soon enough anyway.
Well, look, I mean, he's never going to be a finisher repute or worth you know, touting. But you got to give him credit. He does the work in the corners, and he's tenacious, and he somehow finds a way to get the puck out of the corners and get it to either Tavares or Marner without taking a penalty. Whereas, you know, for the most part of this year, Kapanen has been trying to fill the Hyman role, and it just isn't working. Now, I think part of that is on being on his off wing, Kapanen, but part of that is, you know, Hyman's got a grip to him that I'm not sure that Kapanen has. Kapanen's got all the speed in the world, and you can't take away from that. And he had a really strong game tonight, I thought, with a goal and assist. But in doing what Hyman does, I don't know that that's Kapanen's forte. So I think, you know, that was not the best pair for him. And look, I'm not going to give Babcock much credit often, but I will give him credit for recognizing that that wasn't working and changing the lines. I mean, last night, for the most part, he had Moore with Tavares and Marner, and that seemed to spark that line. And then tonight, when they were down in the third period, he put Makhachev up with Marner and Tavares, and they did get a couple chances. And then, of course, Tavares got a goal to make the game close with the extra attacker. But yeah, I think overall, as a line, I think that's been the most disappointing line for me.
Agreed, and I think you nailed it, Adam, with your Kapanen breakdown there. They're asking him to do a role that he's just not doing. He's more flying down the wing, taking shots, speed, not dumping in when the battle's down low. He can do that, but he just can't do that on a consistent enough basis that Hyman can, which is what brings a big value to the line, I guess. I like you said, I thought it was smart for Babcock to recognize that. Last night he had more there. Tonight, for a while, Makhachev got a couple stints there in the third period. And I'd just like to say that one thing that I was worried about going into this year, that we had trouble last year, was we didn't have a fourth line. And just, for example, against Detroit, Gauthier played 11 minutes, had 5 shots, went 7-for-7 in the face-off circle. Leafs were up 18-7 in shots when he was on the ice, and goals were 2-0. So I was worried that we wouldn't have a selection of fourth liners that could actually play. Like when you see Boston and St. Louis playing the finals, you see that they roll 4 lines. Mm-hmm. All 4 lines play, and we need some jam. And I got to say, with Timoshoff as well, I think they're realizing, I hope Babcock just like sticks to a lineup rather than switching out 4 and 5 people each time, because he takes analytics when you're switching out your 3rd and 4th liners. Yeah. That doesn't even make any sense. If you're going to risk Matthews, okay, maybe, but I don't understand the logic that he goes with when it comes to dressing and skating players. It doesn't make any sense to me sometimes, but I think that we have really good forward depth. We're going to lose those players. We're not going to be able to keep the Moores, the Makhachevs long term because of our cap situation, but we have a really good shot. I just hope the team gets together in the next 10 games.
Yeah, I think that line, the Gauthier, Shore, and Timoshoff line has got to be the most impressive for the mere fact that if you would ask me last year the value of Gauthier to this team, I would have laughed in your face and said there isn't much of one. But he's put in the work in the off season. Clearly,
Oh,
he's
big time. He skates with Barb Underhill, their skating coach. But like she's worked, I remember seeing him, I think his first ever like rookie camp, he wore 13 for Matt Sundin. And me and my friend were watching the like live internet feed for it, and we couldn't stop laughing at number 13. He looked like Bambi on the ice. He couldn't skate. We just kept saying, like, why would you pick 13? Draw attention to yourself like that. I don't even know if they actually picked the numbers, but just to see how far he's come from then, it's crazy. His skating has improved, like you said.
Yeah, I mean,
It's it from last year to this year is crazy.
his stride is better, and you know, I think what's making him more, first of all, the speed is making him more effective, but also his face off. Like, I think tonight, you know, in a losing cause, I think he was 7 for 7 on the face off, and so that's improved. But also, you know, he's a big man, and when you're that big, the hope is that you use your size to your advantage. Last year, he wasn't doing that. This year, he definitely is using his size to an advantage, and I
Yes.
think he's it's helping his game big time. So I agree with you. Look, I know people were upset in the home opener when Babcock sat Spezza, you know, against Ottawa, and how could you do that to a veteran? And how could you do that? And blah blah blah. But you know. Again, rare that I'll do this, but I'll defend Babcock after the fact, in the sense that, look, he's done the alternating thing for a couple of games, and it seems to me that every time Spezza and Patan are in there, you know, they'll take penalties at the most inopportune times, and oftentimes we'll get scored out of it. Like, if you look at the game against Tampa Bay, you know, we tie the game, Babcock would put the fourth line out with Patan and Spezza on. One of those two, that night it was more often than not Patan, would take a stupid penalty. And next thing you know, Tampa Bay would score. So it seems like our fourth line, whenever Gauthier, Timoshov, and Shore are on that line, they have good nights. So enough with the rotation. Let's get them into a consistent rhythm like he's been doing, and I think that's been paying off for us. Yeah, were you gonna say them?
I'm saying you're being kind to Jason Spezza to matter
Yeah.
like you're to exactly what Adam's saying is he's not playing good enough. Whenever he's in, he's not playing. I don't know if
Yeah.
Jason Spezza got to play consistently every day to be a good player. I don't know if he just can't play a third or fourth line role that we need for him. But you're right. Gauthier won 9 faceoffs tonight. Was nine and
Oh, it's
oh.
not. Oh, okay. Wow, even
So
better.
he only played 9 minutes. So I'd
Yeah.
rather 9 minutes of 9-0 Gauthier than like he's just younger and better than Spezza right now for what we need him to play for.
Yeah.
And same thing you say with Batan. I gotta say Gauthier's smart. He doesn't take any stupid penalties. I would wish that he would use his body a little bit more. But if that's not his game, hitting. If his game is protecting puck down low and winning faceoffs, then if you're not gonna get scored on, I'm gonna be okay with it. Like you said, we can put him in to take face off. I'm more disappointed with, like you pointed out before, Tavares' line, and at times Matthews has been really good and then has been not there sometimes. So I don't
Right,
know. It's just
but
go.
speaking of Matthews, let's give him his due where his due is deserved.
Oh yeah.
He's offensively started out like a house on fire. He's got 7 goals in 8 games, and what impresses me about Matthews is when he's got that puck in the corner and he's working his way out front. Most guys on the opposition can't take the puck off him. So when he's got, I get what you're saying, especially what I've noticed in the face-off department,
Oh yeah,
where
that's the other
sometimes he
thing, yeah.
struggles. But in terms of protecting the puck once he's got it, I think
Oh my God,
he's
he's a master. He's
yeah.
a an offensive zone. There's nothing, and I've seen big strides this year compared to last year. I don't know if it was, but pre-injury, he was the same way he is now. But post-injury last year, he didn't play a two-way game like he has been playing this year.
Right.
He comes back. He had a really good back check on, I want to say it was Ovechkin,
yes,
or Carlson, somebody in this game. And he made a mistake. He gave out the puck, but he hustled back.
Right.
And it's just stuff that you like to see from your best player. It's just like his shot to Adam is, it's our world. It's behind just Ovechkin, in my opinion, the best shots in the game.
You know what's impressive about his shot is that it seems like he changes his approach every time he gets an offensive chance. And that's impressive because, you know, for many years, Ovechkin had the same move where he'd cut in off the wing, you know, and then take his shot. Or the one timer on the power play. Matthews is very deceptive and the shot is constantly changing. But again, what I like about Matthews is that it's not something he takes for granted. He works at that. Or he worked at that in the offseason, and apparently in practice he does the work to change it up.
Oh, it's clear to see because of the way he's sometimes just stick handling and the goalie might think he's going to still stick handle, and he'll come out of stick handling like out of nowhere and have the shot release. His release is crazy, and it just goes to show like there's levels of players. Some players can't even skate when they got the puck. Their feet stop because they have to focus on just controlling the puck.
Yeah, right.
Matthews doing all those things. It's just his offensive ability is crazy. It's just I don't know. I think that line's been fantastic. Pretty much season, and I'm thoroughly impressed with Nylander.
Yes,
I have to say, I think he's been behind Matthews. He's probably been the most consistent forward. He's had a ton of chances. I think he hasn't nearly gotten capitalized on enough of them yet. But just the way his passing ability, and it's nice to see that full camp and be full preseason. Really, you can really tell that hurt him last year.
Right, and I think, you know, I got to give him credit because he had the hold on last year, and he didn't have a good season when he returned. There's no doubt about that.
No.
But he, throughout the whole summer, was saying, I'm going to be better. I'm going to come in, and I'm going to dominate. And to his credit, he is doing exactly that. He is, I think, earning everybody's respect back, but also earning the contract he's getting paid. And if you're going to hold out like that, that's what you have to do. And I commend him for doing. I mean, there was a point after the first five games where he had 5 points, right? So, and he and Matthews just have a
instant chemistry.
Yeah. It's a pairing that works. What do you think of Johnsson on that line?
I enjoy him too because he's not afraid to go to the front net. The worst thing about Johnsson is he gets knocked down pretty easily.
Yeah.
And you kind of would like somebody a bit tougher and stronger on their skates to be with those two. But the way that he doesn't care. He reckless abandonment. He goes and plays. He don't care who knocks him down. He'll get up and keep going. It's really crazy how he does not care about, like, he's not afraid. He has no fear in him. Way he plays. I think that compensates for his lack of strength on his skates. And the one thing I want to jump back in with the Nylander thing is everything that his agent and him thought was going to happen did. He got squeezed on his contract and two of the boys got paid big money the year later. Mm-hmm. So I just want to give him a little I guess you were right kind of thing, and I'm still glad that we got savings on Nylander. It was greatly needed. But like you said, it was like you asked before about Johnsson. I think that he needs to capitalize on a few more chances, or I would be okay with switching him with Mikhaev, if that's the way it is. Because I don't know if he's scoring on enough of his chances. I'm seeing a lot of him in the middle of the slot shooting directly in the center of the goalie.
Yeah,
but like I still love the player.
Now, so I'm going to ask you to pick. So far, your standout player of the season early. I mean, I know it's early, but
I gotta say Mikhaev because I knew Moore could do what he's doing. I knew he was a good player. You seen it last year in the games that he played, that he could play, he could forecheck, he could win puck battles, he was an NHL player at 800,000, a really good, he's more of a $2 million NHL player.
Yeah.
So we knew that already. This Mikhaev fellow, especially after Zaitsev, after there's a bit of few the KHL exports
that are supposed to be really good. Yeah.
And this kid's the real deal, Adam. Yeah, this kid is—he's my standout. Like I said, it was close between those two, but like I said, I already knew what more brought to the table. Mikhaev just—he got that instant goal scorer touch. I think he can be the first Russian since Nikolai Kulemin to score 30 goals for the Leafs.
Yeah, and then if he does that, I think you definitely have to get him signed somehow.
Nobody might not be in the cards. Although I think we're both being in agreement. I think there's $4.5 million on the defensive end that I'm pretty okay and comfortable with letting walk at the end of this year.
For sure. Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. But but for my money, I have to agree with you, Mikhaev. Such an unknown. You know what were we going to get with this guy? And you know, like you said, he's scoring goals. He's got 3 in 8 games. And in various degrees, all 3 of them beauties. I mean, he kind of fanned on tonight's breakaway shot, but still went in.
And just the way he utilizes speed and protecting the puck while he's skating, just really good skills on small ice that he showed that he's going to be here for a while.
His first goal was a one-timer on the power play.
Yep.
And his second one, he had a burst of speed. He got through the Detroit defense, outraced Jimmy Howard's poke check, and it was a beauty of a goal. So it's not like he's scoring, you know, butt ugly goals that are going off his knee or off his ass or you know, bouncing off his head on the ground. You know, he's getting some pretty goals, but it's not only his finish; it's the speed. That impresses me. For a man that big, it's impressive to watch him skate.
I agree so much, Adam. And you know, he had to hone his skating ability because being on the big ice in the KHL, that's valued more than his size, like any day. And I also just like to point out his two-way ability. He's been killing penalties for us. His line stick, he gets into passing lanes, and he's a threat to score and in the shorthanded department as well. So just nice to have one more penalty killer.
And that's another thing I've been impressed with, our penalty killing. Overall, I mean, tonight's 5-on-3. What are you going to do?
You can't do much when it's Ovechkin.
But on the whole, I've been impressed with our penalty kill. And just another point on Mikhaev. I like that he's a fan of soup. I mean, so in honor of Mikhaev, and since he's our player of the early season, I got to ask Travis, what's your favorite soup if you had to pick one?
My favorite soup is probably chicken noodle, I'm not going to lie. And I also wanted to say that Mikhaev is second to Matthews for 5-on-5 goals for the Leafs this year.
That's impressive. Yeah, wow. That's quite the stat. For my money, in terms of soup, it's a cream of mushroom for me. I really like that.
That's a good one, too. So
there you go. We have soup discussions on this podcast. It'll be a weekly feed. No, I'm kidding. Won't be a weekly feed. Yeah, exactly. if he goes into a slump, that should be the mantra. No soup for you. We've said our positives. We touched on some negatives, but we're going to expand on the negatives a little bit. One of the things that I have noticed, you know, apart from the mental lapses and the letdowns during games that we have, I don't think Cody Ceci is a top 4 defenseman.
I think you hit the nail right on the head there.
look, you know, offensively, Riley's been great so far, point-wise. He's struggling a little bit this year in the defensive end compared to last year. And I think a lot of that is due to the person he's playing with, which is CeCe. Now, do I think CC is terrible? No. I think that he'd be fine as a fifth or sixth defenseman. But right now, he's in our top two. And that's not where he needs to be, in my opinion. So that is not working out for us, I don't think. You have any differing takes or anything you want to say about CeCe?
I think I alluded to it before when I was talking about the $3.5 million that can come up. I don't think that he has for ability, but he has not consistently anyway. Like, there has been games where he has shown that he can play well, but not enough for to get the minutes that he's getting. Like you said, not five, not six defensemen, and Dermott's coming back in the game now. So hopefully he'll take his spot with Riley. And
I hope it's sooner, because we definitely need Dermott.
And I gotta say, Justin Hall has not been that bad defensively for five. Like, he could be the other person with CeCe, and maybe that could be manageable. But like, it was an okay experiment. But we got the main thing for me is we got rid of Zaitsev's contract at $4.5 million, and we lose CeCe off the books, so we can give Riley $2.5 million more and still have $2 million saved to give to somebody else. So in the end, it was a smart move to just get rid of Zaitsev. But I don't think CC is going to be a long-term thing, especially at $4 million or $4.5 million.
Right. I 100% agree. I like and totally agree with what you said about Justin Hall, for sure. He's been very reliable in that 5-6 spot. And I'm glad that Babcock has decided to stick with him on the regular, because last year he barely played. Now, what do you think of the decision? Okay, well, two-fold question. What did you think of Rasmus Sandin when he was up here? And what do you think of the decision by Leaf management to send him down?
I really enjoyed seeing Sandin's growth and development at him this year. He has NHL level hockey IQ, passing ability, and skating ability, and he does have a good stick. I watched him use a stick lift 3 or 4 different occasions, taking the puck from people. It's just he doesn't have NHL level strength yet,
right?
And I think that he will improve on that, especially with another season in the AHL. I also think that it was cap-related as well. He didn't pass the 9-game threshold to activate his contract. Therefore, next year, when we need more cap savings, we still have a, if he doesn't come back up anymore, a rookie-level deal, Sandin, who hasn't like lived it out. He's still on his rookie contract.
Right, yeah.
So we'll have another year before we have to think about that. So I think that still is a good thing. And I think we got to see him up here and see that he can play at this level. So when the time comes, hopefully next season, he's ready to take the jump into hopefully a top four, about like a 4-3-4 role.
Yeah, I agree with you on that set of statements. I don't really have much to counter with that. I think the reason they sent him down is for that reason that you suggested. But I think he's definitely going to be a top four when he gets here on a permanent basis, whenever that may be.
So I have a question for you before you go on. Looking at him, do you think possibly he could be a replacement on the second pairing, the way Tyson Barrie is on that second pairing right now, the other offensive defenseman on the second pairing?
So you're saying he replace Tyson Barrie?
Yeah, like we would let Tyson Barrie walk because he's going to get a raise over his $5 million. And if he, do you think he could fill that role?
Potentially,
maybe not next year. Yeah, maybe not next year. But do you think in his, do you think his career outlook? Do you think he can fill that kind of role in his career?
Sure. We'd have to see him on the power play, which we didn't really get a chance to see because, you know, Barry's here and all that.
We'll get to see that a little bit more in an AHL now too, which hopefully.
So if he can get more power play time and really hone that skill, then I think definitely he's got that capability. For sure. Now, one guy, Travis, that at some point, whether it's when Dermot comes back or sometime soon here, like in the next game or two, because I know they sent Sandin down and they brought up Gravello or Gravel, yeah, or however you pronounce his name. Yeah.
It just says Gravel.
Yeah, okay. It's like the stuff you take when your stomach is upset.
Yeah. Time,
so I should start taking that whenever I watch a game. But anyway, hopefully he comes in soon, because I'll tell you why. I don't know much about him. I don't know how good he is. But it can't get much worse than Martin Marincin. Like, good Lord. I mean, if you could put a bag of fertilizer on skates, you could call it Martin Marincin. You could put it in a Marincin jersey. He's terrible. And he doesn't skate, or he doesn't skate well. I don't know what he does that Babcock sees that is a plus. Maybe it's his long stick that
Babcock is impressed with. It's exactly that. It's his penalty killing with the long stick. He's really good at preventing entries to the zone. That's it, really. He doesn't have really good numbers in any other way. I don't understand it as well. I'm going to let you keep going because it just blows my mind.
Like, I can't say, ever since he made the crucial mistake in game six of overtime against Washington in the playoffs, it cost us the series. I said back then there were two people that I didn't want to see at a Leaf game again. One was Justin Bieber, because he was there at that game and he gave us bad luck. And two was Martin Marincin. Yet, I'm still seeing Marincin on the team. I don't understand it.
I don't know how he tricks people, Adam. Like, I have a really good friend. We were watching the game. I think it was last week or the week before. It was against the Habs. And Marincin did something good, and my buddy looked over at me and said, maybe, he can. I just stared at him. I didn't say any words for a little while. And he laughed. And I was like, we're not going to go down this road again. He done something good for a couple minutes. You're going to know eventually that he's terrible. And within 10 minutes, he made a terrible mistake. They scored. And I just still stared at my buddy. He was like, yeah, I don't know why I believe that.
You remember that old saying, if you throw, like, you throw shit against the wall and sees what sticks? I think that's what Marincin does when he gets on the ice. And once in a while, something sticks. The rest of the time, it's a bunch of crap against the wall. Like, I don't understand. I don't get it. To me, this says it all. When the Edmonton Oilers, who are one of the most defense-deprived teams in the league, they've been rebuilding for, 20 years, 10 years, 20 years? I mean, they're 5-1 now. Everybody's excited. But what I say is wait. And just let's see how it plays out. But they're still, I think, in need of a good defense or two. And when they're trading Martin Marincin away, that's where we got him from. That should be a red flag, a warning sign, And I don't know. I just need somebody to come in and I need to see him in the press box. That's the only place Martin Marincin looks good. Better yet, I don't even want to, unfortunately, see, I like the Marlies, so I don't want to saddle the Marlies with that curse. So just either put him in the press box, put him on a plane to wherever the hell he's from, and let's call it a day. I'm done with this guy. Bring Gravel up. Dermot, can you come back soon so we can get rid of him? But again, knowing Babcock, this is my next complaint, but knowing Babcock, When Dermot comes back, he's going to send down, right?
Justin Hall.
You're damn right. You got it.
I don't think he has a choice, though. I think Dubas will do the right thing. He does have the final say in who goes up and goes down, I think.
Kyle, do the right thing, and let's pack Marincin on an airplane.
The worst thing for Marincin is he's like Robbie Shrimp. He's amazing in the AHL. Like he had really good numbers, which blows my mind. And then he comes up here and it's just a level that he's not able to play at. That's just what it is, not consistently anyway.
But there are those players, Travis, that are forever AHLers.
Yeah,
And I think Marincin is one of those, right? So
yeah, it's the old right of real 100%.
It's like, what's his name? Remember that guy? He used to wear number 39 for us. What the heck was his name? He went to the Rangers at one point. Oh, damn it. I can't remember his name. Oh, I mean,
I don't know.
It's escaping now. If it, on a future episode, it'll come back to me.
Is that like Lanny Bajadas?
No, that's, well, that's a good example, but.
No, well, he was amazing when he came up. Yeah. Then he broke his neck.
Yeah, and that was it. But no, yeah. It's not Lanny Bajadas. It's somebody, number 39. I can't remember what his name is. But on a future episode, I'll remember. And I'll let everybody know that. One of my issues with Babcock, Travis, and I'll never understand this, is the way he deploys the use of the backup goalie. Now, Babcock has this rule where, regardless of who we're playing, Anderson gets the first game of the back-to-back, and our backup, in this case, Hutchinson, gets the second game of the back-to-back. Again, regardless of who we're playing. I think that strategy how can I put this? Is a steaming pile of horseshit. Because, and did you hear his explanation for why he does it?
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Was what frustrated me was he's basically saying he doesn't want Freddie Anderson not have any confidence.
Would you like me to read you the quote? Because I have the quote.
Yes, I was looking for it. So please read it. The
quote. Here it is from earlier today, as of this recording, which is October 16th, 2019. Mike Babcock, the esteemed $50 million coach of ours, says that. I like winning the first half of the back-to-back. I believe Freddie gives us the best chance to do that. I also believe it's important for him to play with our team fresh. How he feels is really important for our group, and that's why we do it. That is the most moronic thing I've ever heard. Because, for several reasons. Look. If Freddie Anderson has that much lack of mental confidence in himself, and I'm being serious here, hire him a psychiatrist. Because, look, here's the way. Now, look, I'm not a $50 million coach, but I think this makes sense. Now, tell me if I'm off base here, Travis, but I think this makes sense, okay? You look at the schedule and you see what opponents you're playing on the back-to-back. So like this week's games, for example, me looking at it, a quote-unquote uneducated, non-$50 million earning coach, looking at our schedule, would have said, well, Minnesota's 1-4 or 1-4-1 or something along that line, right? Can't score to save their lives. You know, they're slower than Moses heading up the mountain, getting the Ten Commandments, the whole nine yards. That, to me, seems like a game that Hutchinson would do well in. In fact, I think a good game against a struggling team, even though they're struggling, would be great for Hutchinson's confidence. And then what I would do is put Anderson against Alex Ovechkin, Kuznetsov, and the Washington Capitals. Because guess what? Our team is going to be tired on a back-to-back. And you know who can bail you out when you make stupid mistakes because you're tired? Your starting goaltender. Am I wrong?
Keep preaching, man. Keep preaching.
Am I speaking a foreign language? Am I not making sense? Is this the bizarre world to bring in our love of comics? Am I talking from the bizarre world, or am I making sense?
No, you're making perfect sense, Adam. I don't understand it either. And to be honest with you, if that is his reason why on earth would you say that? Why wouldn't you just say, we like to win the first game of a back-to-back. We like to win that no matter what. And then you can say something like, we were afraid that we didn't let the dam that burst from Minnesota against us. And I'd be like, okay, I'll take that. I still think you're wrong in doing it, but I'll take that. But instead you say this weird thing about you want to make sure his mindset is good and how he feels is how our group plays. That's a bunch of bull crap. He's been in the league for 8, 9, 10 years. He's played in the playoffs. He went further with Ducks than he ever had with us. Yeah. I don't understand.
He knows what our collapse looks like. He's used to it by now.
Yeah, I don't understand. But like you said, do you think he's the better goalie? Yes, playing against a better team.
Right.
I don't understand. Like, especially after seeing what happened to Hutchinson when they played Habs, how they just stopped skating.
Yeah.
But yeah. It blew my mind, Adam. It don't make any sense to me. And it's him overthinking things. It's them worrying about Freddie Anderson being fresh. It blows my mind. Play your best players.
I would love somebody to ask Anderson, read him that exact quote, and get Anderson's feedback, because I bet you Anderson would tell you he probably wouldn't. To be the polite person that he is, he wouldn't tell you it's a load of crap. But deep down in his mind, I think he would think that's a load of crap.
Oh, I believe so. Babcock got a little bit of Keenan in it, in the way that he alienates his players at times.
Sometimes I think he shouldn't. He shouldn't talk. Either he should have a script writer that writes his stuff down and he reads it off, and so he doesn't make himself look stupid. I think him and Trump should pool their resources and hire a scriptwriter to write their interviews for them. Because every time either of them talks, they sound like morons. But to me, again, here's a better explanation. He's the coach, right? All he had to say is, I do it that way because I want to. Now, it sounds rude, but hey, it's better than
basically implying that you're starting goaltender. The goaltender that you're supposed to ride for the whole playoffs is very fragile mentally.
Yeah, well, you see, what he's done with that comment, the genius that he is, he's thrown Anderson under the bus, and he basically, without mentioning Hutchinson's name, says, I don't give three shits about Hutchinson or what his confidence is like or what his record looks like. Because,
also, Adam, one other thing, also, who be playing Saturday night? Do you think a certain pest is not going to bring that up to Anderson while he's in the net?
Probably.
Oh, 100%.
Well, he's trying to lick Anderson, too.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And that's Bob Babcock for putting that even in play.
I mean, it's just, it's one of the stupidest things I've ever heard. And I just, when I read that today, I had to text it to a friend of mine, and I said, can you believe this? And he thought I was making it up, but I wasn't, unfortunately. So, to me, that strategy of how he deploys the backup goalie is ridiculous. Now, do I blame all of our loss on, tonight or any of our losses solely on Babcock? No, of course not. However, when he comes out in an interview and says, well, we got to start on time. How many times does he say that in the press conference? How many times did we get scored on first? So whatever message you're sending, right? 9 times out of 10, they're not hearing it.
Oh, it's not working at all. It's falling on deaf ears.
I wish he would spend less time watching the Hunting Channel, which I heard him mention 1,000 times in the playoffs. That's why I bring it up. And more time about actually implementing what he says he's going to in the press conference post-game. Like, look, I'm going to make no bones about it. And you can vouch for me that I said this. When we lost to Boston last year in Game 7, and we needed 2 goals, in the third period, and he kept putting out our fourth line plus Hyman instead of Matthews, who only played 15 minutes, I thought that was the wrong strategy. And I said to you several times that if it was me, I would have fired him after our playoff exit last year. Am I making that up, or did I not say
that? Nope, you said that.
So I still think they made the wrong decision in bringing him back, because I think, look, if you look at Sheldon Keefe, okay, now he's lost how many of the Marty players to the Leaf roster, and every year we're in the playoff hunt. The Martys, I'm speaking of.
Yeah.
2 years ago.
I'll just say one cautionary tale, Dallas Eakins.
Right. There is that. But
yeah, that's the danger. I agree. You know, I agree with what, you know, I agree with it. And I think you're right and what they should have done. But just to play devil's advocate, that's the thing that they'll bring up is if you're Kyle Dubas, you got to be like, if I make this move and it backfires, I'm done. If I give him another year and I make this move, I don't think I'll be done if he doesn't succeed again. So I can see why Dubas didn't do it, but I'm with you. I think it should have been done.
Okay, so here's my question to you. It's two questions. One, do you think Babcock lasts the year? And two, if we get eliminated in the first round again, do you think Babcock is gone and they elevate Sheldon Keefe to coach for next season?
I don't think Babcock will be gone this season because I don't think they're going to be bad enough to be so far down the standings that he'll have to be for them to lose their job.
Right.
I don't think that. I think they'll be a playoff team pretty much the whole stretch of the way. So that is something that I'm not worried about. But I do think that if they do bounce in the first round again this year, he's done. He's done like dinner.
Yeah. And do you think Sheldon Keefe will get an opportunity?
Oh, 100%. Dubas found Sheldon O'Keefe for the Marlies. He's his guy. He's going to take him out for sure.
All right. So that's your prediction. I'm along the lines of your thinking, unless we really start, you know.
Yeah. If we're really bad, then I can see him going, but I don't see us being anywhere under 500.
A friend of mine suggests that he's got a betting pool going, and I'll pull up the message so I get his opinion right. But he says that he's got $100 down that Babcock doesn't make it past Christmas. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, it's just some of the little things, some of the decisions he makes just bug me. But
it's a bit old school, Adam. That's all. It's a bit before, like it's a bit 06, 07, 08, 09, 10 instead of like the way it is now. It's a little bit back his decisions, and it just frustrates me at times. Yeah.
But I think overall, you know, in the first 8 games, I think, you know, you look at the positives and you hope that you know, they can work out these little momentary lapses. And look, maybe having a little bit of a rough patch at this early in the season will, you know, sort of get us over having it late, or in the playoffs when it matters. But there are a lot of positives to look at, and let's see if we can put this loss behind us, and then rebound. hopefully, starting with Boston, because that is a game that I really, really want to have. I want to put a good showing against them. So let's hope that they can put this one behind. And, you know, for me, I think here's my takeaway. I mean, I don't think you or I like when they lose a game. Unfortunately, nobody expected them to go 82-0. And if you did, you're delusional. But my thing is, if they're competitive and they lose to a good team like Washington, like they were for the most part tonight, you don't necessarily mind that because they were getting some chances and they were in the game the whole time. The games that bother me are the games like Tampa Bay, where it was just a rout and a lackadaisical effort the whole way through. So let's hope we don't have any more of those going forward. But let's see what the next batch of of games, you know, hold for us. Let's hope we rebound off this loss and have a good game against Boston. Yeah,
two home games. Adam needs to get up on the right foot and win these. They have 3 days off in between.
So do you have what's the 5-game outlook? Do you have it in front of you?
Yes, I got it right here.
Five games. What's the outlook?
It's Boston at home on the 19th, and then Columbus at home on a Monday, and then they're at Boston back to back on the 22nd. Then they got San Jose at home on the 25th, and Montreal back to back on the 26th.
Mm.
So 2 back to backs this week.
All right. So
very tough schedule. The first, pretty much 10 games for the Leafs. Yeah, first 10 games.
My hope is that of the next 5, we've got to get at least 1 versus Boston.
Oh yeah, I agree. I think the first one is big, Adam, because it's home. You need to have a good showing, like you said. Let's hope that the couple injured players make their way back, Hyman and Dermott. And
looking at that schedule, I'd like to see us beat Boston at home. I want to see us beat Columbus again, and I want to see us take Montreal. If we can get 3 of those 5. And maybe get an overtime or 2 in there in those 5 as well. I think I'd be all right with that. So let's see if they can shoot for that. And we're going to try and do this every 5 to 7 games when our schedules, you know, line up. So that's the tentative plan. So we will. Is there any final words you want to add, Travis?
No, I enjoyed this, and I love the depth at forward that we have. So I'm just excited. I think they'll get things together, and I can't wait to come back and talk after 5 or 7 games.
All right. So with that, we will sign off by saying, go Leafs, go.
Go and, Leafs, go.
And Leafs forever, from the first goal to the last. So long, everybody.
Later, guys.